Here are the WGXC headlines for Tuesday, March 28th. 28-year-old with military weapons shot and killed 3 9-year-old children, a school administrator, a substitute teacher, and a janitor March 27th near Nashville. So far in 2023, 9,870 people have died from gun violence in the United States as of March 27th, according to the Gun Violence Archive, which is an average of more than 114 deaths every day. Albany Medical Hospital went on lockdown for hours March 27th after someone reported seeing a gun. An armed man barricaded himself in the Albany Medical Center hospital room of his 97-year-old mother. Police exploded a flashbang distraction grenade outside the hospital to take the unidentified man who had a BB gun into custody. Elsewhere in Albany, the legislature and the governor are trading favored projects to put in the state budget that is due April 1st. Metro North trains on the Harlem and Hudson lines began new schedules on March 26th with fewer weekend trains to allow for track repairs. And in Hudson, weekend alternative side parking rules were suspended as of March 25th.
Hello, this is Liliana.
I'm Danaya.
And I'm Badila.
And we're from Perfect 10 After School,
a wonderful club for girls in Hudson, New York.
And you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA.
Community radio for Columbia and Greene counties.
Perfect 10 girls got it going on.
Oh, yeah.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Morning Show, and today on the Morning Show, Mayuka Fujino speaks with Peter Schoenberger, experienced birder and bird photographer in Woodstock in Ulster County. We'll also hear about the latest state budget negotiations as the state budget is due on April 1st. We'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after Jason Martin from Troy has finished singing this song on the WGXC Morning Show.
This is the network, network, on air, in air, waves controlled, on air, in air, channel, connection, and the moon turns the blood, a stream runs through, this is the network, network, this is the news, this is the network, this is the news, this is the network, network, this is the news, this is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Belle and Abigail of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, March 28th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that Catskill High students left school early on March 27th because of a broken pipe discovered beneath the building. High school students have been shifted to remote learning for the rest of the week. Superintendent Melissa A. Barrow said, quote, "A broken pipe was discovered under the building that was used by our science classes. The broken pipe is in an isolated area in the high school crawl space," unquote. All after-school sports in Catskill will meet in the middle school gym for the rest of the week, the school said. In December, the Catskill Middle School building was closed for several weeks. Students moved to the high school after an old valve attached to a water main broke. Read more about this story at Porcupine Soup. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that the Association of Towns and the New York Conference of Mayors issued a joint statement March 27th applauding Governor Kathy Hochul's incentive-heavy approach to adding affordable housing in New York. Quote, "Housing growth targets, transit-oriented development, and state funding all remain with the addition of a strong community-driven and incentive-based program in which municipalities throughout the state will be poised to participate," unquote, the groups said in a statement. The state budget is due April 1st, and there should be a major housing funding in the plan. Quote, "There is no silver bullet solution to the housing crisis," unquote, said Soshi Nameka, the state director of the Working Families Party. Quote, "But there are proposals currently on the table that would protect tenants from exorbitant rent increases, stem the rising tide of evictions, and end outdated zoning laws that have foreclosed on opportunities for generations of Black, brown, and working-class New Yorkers," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. On March 27th, Assemblymember Chris Tague crowed about how he, quote, "authored, introduced, and passed a legislative resolution memorializing March 25th through 31st, 2023, as Farm Workers Awareness Week in the state of New York," unquote. But while Tague was honoring farm workers today, a month ago he was one of the loudest advocates for not allowing farm workers to get paid in the same way as other workers. On March 27th, his press release called Tague a, quote, "a staunch advocate for New York State agriculture," unquote. On February 22nd, a Tague press release said, quote, "I am deeply disappointed that Commissioner Reardon did not listen to common sense or, most importantly, the farmers and farm workers impacted and reject this downstate-driven policy that has no place in our farms," unquote. Tague was commenting on the state 10 years from now getting farm workers overtime pay in the same way as everyone else. Currently, farm workers have to work 60 hours to get overtime pay, while all other workers get overtime after 40 hours. The New York State Department of Labor is easing in the change gradually, so it will be another decade before New York farm workers get overtime pay the same way that everyone else does. Tague, a Republican, represents Greene and Schoharie counties in the Assembly and lobbied heavily against the overtime rule change. This has been the WGXC Daily News. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, March 28th. Local early morning temperatures range from 30 degrees in Tannersville to 37 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 38 degrees. Now, that covers a kind of wide area. Up in the mountains, the ground is around 34 degrees, but down by the river, we're seeing ground temperatures of 42 and 43. You might notice those numbers tend to correspond with the river's vernal warming, which today will be at 41 degrees, and tide strength will be low. Sorry to jumble up the order of everything today, but it's spring, things are crazy, and also, because it's spring, we're going to take a second to recognize the people out there that aren't exactly welcoming its warm embrace. That would be the allergy sufferers. Sorry, here we go again. Today will be low, but tomorrow and Thursday, maple, juniper, and elm pollen is expected to be flying around at medium levels. But if you want to be on the positive side, we have entered planting season, and things like basil, bell peppers, cabbage, celery, kale, even tomatoes can be sown based on a last frost date in mid-May. It might actually be sooner than that, but, you know, we're just taking it safe. It is still way too early for seedlings. Okay, on to the weather that everybody already knows about because you all have apps in your pocket. Today, the scattered rain and maybe a little snow all should end by 11 a.m. Skies slowly and steadily open up with conditions that are expected to be cold. So wrap up if going out and don't forget the sunglasses. A high of 50 happens at 4 p.m. Overnight, we dip to, 29 degrees. We break freezing by 8 a.m. tomorrow, then heat steadily to 54 degrees at 3 p.m. Overnight, a little light rain, maybe some snow as we drop to a crunchy 26 degrees. Then we pop back up to 40 for the afternoon on Thursday. And Friday, we hit 48, but it gets windy and rainy. Sunset today will be at 7:01 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:41 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun is quietly in what I'll call standard mode. It's got some sunspots and mild flare activity is expected, but nothing that will affect any of us. So when I'm not talking about it, this is how it usually will be. Just 1% chance of X-class flares today, and incoming light solar wind is expected this weekend. Solar wind speed is currently 303 kilometers per second at a scant 0.43 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 15 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board with good conditions below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2.3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 128. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream to the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Cue the Air Force. Maraschino cherry. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras. Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Doesn't television stretch the imagination?
Up to 21 inches, yes.
Are we on?
Back in five.
All right, let's go.
And three...
We are back, and I'm joined now by this fucking guy. Senator Cruz, gun violence has become an epidemic in this country, yet your party continues to offer little more than thoughts and...
Look, all of us have had people who've lost loved ones, and then the first thing you do when someone has lost a loved one is you reach out and say, hey, I'm lifting you up in prayer. I'm praying for you, your family.
Yeah, that's cute. But with all due respect, prayers don't stop these horrific tragedies. And should you really be sending out any more thoughts? I mean, you barely have any coming in to begin with. Because you're dumb.
And the modern day left is more and more extreme. They have this bizarre antipathy to God and to prayers.
Well, it seems the modern day right is more interested in firearms than in children's safety, veterans, health care, you know, fashion and moisturizing, obviously.
But the Democrats' proposal every time is always the same, which is take away guns.
Damn, it's scary just to check the news on your phone when we're living in a war zone. What, again? Jeez, not again, please. How can there be such nonchalance from Republicans? Here they come again with their favorite response. Thoughts and prayers. Tweet your corny last respects. Screw the laws and background checks. Who needs common sense? Sing a psalm like Pence. Thoughts and prayers. That would be appropriate if they all were running Hallmark stores. thoughts and prayers won't save our lives. So go shove your...
May God's peace be with you.
Yeah. This whole country's in the... What would Jesus post on Twitter? Every day looks like a scene from Private Ryan. What they're selling, I ain't buying.
Here's the situation. It's the gun-free school zones. Those are the biggest problems.
That ain't it, girl. Cut the shit, girl. Seems this playbook's the GOP's. Open fire and cue the choir. And Lindsay's back on his knees for thoughts and prayers. Who needs rational reform? Guess this nightmare's just the norm. While they're taking shots, just think happy thoughts. Hawk your wares when you'd rather please your base. And you're up the NRA's. Oh, thoughts and prayers.
And prayers
do not save lives. Try gun control.
I'm not going to apologize for thoughts or prayers.
Legislation. Honey, what a waste. Gross inaction can gain you traction if you just copy and paste. More thoughts and prayers. When the problem's getting worse, quote your favorite Bible verse. So compassion is so in fashion, cause no one cares. It's a dog and pony show. Keep your holy rosary on the shelf.
Thoughts and prayers.
Do not save lives. Thoughts and prayers. Take your thoughts and prayers and go on.
May God's peace be with you.
Because you're dumb.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
I am truly without words, and our children deserve better.
First Lady Jill Biden joined lawmakers and people everywhere in condemning Monday's tragic school shooting in Nashville, Tennessee. Three children and three adults were shot and killed at a Christian grade school for 200 students from preschool to sixth grade. Police believe the shooter was a former female student armed with at least two assault-style rifles. She was shot and killed by police. Ashbae Beasley, a survivor of the Highland Park, Illinois shooting in July, was visiting Nashville at the time. She says she's lobbied Washington lawmakers for stronger gun laws for months with few results.
I have met with over 130 lawmakers. How is this still happening? How are our children still dying, and why are we failing them?
The U.S. is now averaging one mass shooting every day, according to the Gun Violence Archive. The White House says it welcomes Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's announcement that he will delay his plan to overhaul Israel's judiciary. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says that allows additional time for compromise.
Democratic societies are strengthened by checks and balances, and fundamental changes to a democratic system should be pursued with the broadest possible base of popular support.
Netanyahu's plan has led to months of protest, including unprecedented nationwide strikes across Israel Monday and the closure of its international airport. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois has asked the Federal Trade Commission to investigate reports that pharmaceutical distributor AmerisourceBergen will not distribute the abortion pill Methotrexate in more than two dozen states.
If the anti-choice movement truly wanted to protect life, they'd stop trying to strip away Americans' health care.
AmerisourceBergen is the sole distributor of Methotrexate. Mayors with the National League of Cities say too many state and federal authorities are preempting local governments' ability to pass gun regulations or increase the minimum wage. Executive Director Clarence Anthony says 34 states preempt local housing laws.
We need to stand up and say we're going to lead our own community and not have state and federal leaders try to tell us how to lead at the local level.
Chipotle Mexican Grill has agreed to pay $240,000 to former employees as part of a settlement for labor law violations. The company announced it was permanently closing its Augusta, Maine location last year after workers began organizing a union. And Senate Republicans say they have a bill to overturn President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. The program, which promises up to $20,000 of relief for eligible borrowers, is currently being held up by the Supreme Court. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Our Dark Money series has explored how member stockholders of limited liability corporations can use LLCs to hide their political donations. Now we'll see how the wealthy use LLCs to circumvent a state's personal contribution limit. Let's say you're a real estate developer and own multiple properties, each registered as an LLC. You've personally given the maximum allowed by your state, but want to give more. Enter the LLC loophole. In many states, your LLC is allowed to donate too, so you can give tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands more to your candidate. In New Hampshire, Republican Governor Chris Sununu received a pipeline of campaign cash from developers, real estate companies, and other businesses over multiple campaign cycles. In his 2016 race, 17 LLCs donated $7,000 each, controlled by one Dunkin' Donuts franchisee. In 2020, a real estate mogul used 4 LLCs to donate $20,000. Just last year, Democratic New York Governor Kathy Hochul accepted 5 $5,000 donations from LLCs tied to a single wine distributor, according to independent news site New York Focus. That reporting shows Hochul received $150,000 from LLCs tied to just 9 corporations. This, despite New York's new campaign finance law designed to stop rich donors from getting around the rules. More on that tomorrow. We have articles and explainers at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Now we're going to hear my interview with Peter Schoenberger. Again, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Could you briefly introduce yourself?
Okay. I'm Peter Schoenberger. I'm from Woodstock, New York. I'm a birder and a bird photographer, and I've been at this for close to 20 years now. It's my heart's passion, and yeah.
Okay, could you tell us about this place, this great Vlaai, you said?
Yeah, Vlaai, the great Vlaai. It's a Dutch word for for swamp. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of bodies of waters around here called Vlaai, but this is the great Vlaai, and it is 5 acres that surrounds this body of water that's about a mile and a half long. And it is actually, I'm told it's a bog, technically, because of the floating mats of mud.
Bog?
A bog. It's a word, a specific word for a certain kind of swamp.
Oh.
And I think because of the floating mats of vegetation and mud, that it falls into that definition. It's a wonderful place that I've always been attracted to, places that humans have desecrated, like this place. This is places used as pretty much like a dump. Mm-hmm. And industry. There was mushroom processing that happened right on this land that we're standing, and it's been a dumping ground for people. But the wildlife doesn't care. And they've come and made it their own, and we have a great variety of birds and bobcats and bears and otters and you name it. It's
you see otter here?
Oh yeah. So since the first time I ever walked here, I've always been drawn to it.
That's great. So I read a little bit about you, assuming that there's no other Peter Schoenberger in Woodstock.
I don't think so.
And one of the articles said that I found it very interesting when I learned that you hadn't been a birder until the age of 43.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get older, we could become, you know, a little reluctant to put ourselves in the position of a beginner. And I always find it inspiring to hear about people who start something new as an adult or at an older age. And so that's kind of, for me, I struggle a lot with mental health and stuff in my 20s. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the thing I had to start as an older person. So I learned English in my 30s. And, you know, I'm doing radio, but it's only like the last like 7 years or so. So I always have to put myself in the place, even as an immigrant too. Like you're the one who doesn't know anything, and they can be intimidating. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's experienced it the same way, but I just find it sometimes challenging, although it could be exciting, to walk into a completely new thing as an older person. So I was very interested in about in your experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can only put it this way, and I think people who find birding, whenever they find it, I had no choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm.
My situation was, I grew up in the woods.
Okay.
I grew up with binoculars around my neck, but I was not looking at bird. I was looking I was a hunter too. I used to hunt when I was young. And I was looking for amphibians and white-tailed deer and whatnot, but just did not see birds. And as I go back over my life, I see a million times where I saw neat birds and that it could have pulled me into that, but it wasn't. Well, actually, the story is a little more interesting in that when I was 37, my one and only son was born.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was two, he was diagnosed with a very rare cancer. And after several years of trying to deal with that, he died.
Oh.
And when he died, it became very clear to me that I needed to take care of myself and just slow down, no demands on myself. And I continued like that for several years, and I was still hurting because losing my son. And I finally decided to book a trip up in Vancouver Island in Canada, where they take you out and you kayak with orca whales.
Uh-huh.
And since I was doing that and spending all that money, I decided I'm going to buy some really nice binoculars. So I did. I ordered a pair of these Swarovski binoculars I'd seen in a sporting goods store. And when they came, I sat down on my deck and I'm looking up in the trees and I see this little black and white bird with this tang orange throat, just really bright. I looked it up. It's a Blackburnian warbler. It just blew my mind that this little bird was right there in my property.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got me thinking, my goodness, what else is there? And that was the moment. It just happened. And from that day, I mean, prior to that, every hobby I've ever had in my life, I suffered in my 20s. I was hurting and without direction. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I got older.
Mm-hmm.
And my hobbies would last a year and then I'd get bored and I'd move on to something else. But that moment that happened with that Blackburnian warbler changed everything. I suddenly had a passion. I needed to know who the birds were.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like just an interest. I was compelled to find out who they are, where they are, when they are. And so I just began it. I never stopped. Never ever since then. I've been at it all day. Even when I'm working, I'm still looking around. it's what I do. And I don't know what it is. I'm very fascinated by what that is. What it is that changes one thing one day, I could care less about birds. The next day,
mm-hmm.
I needed to do it. I don't know. And I often ask other birders, what is it for them? Because it doesn't seem like it's the same thing it is for me.
Yeah.
But it's having that passion after having 43 years of not necessarily having a passion in life,
mm-hmm.
was a real gift. It's a reason I wake up in the morning. It really... I'm just grateful to have received it.
Hey, going out and watch birds being sort of like part of almost like a recovery, it just expands your life and world.
Well, the natural world has always been like religion to me. Mm. I'm not really much for organized religion. The natural world to me is always a place I went as a child for solace, for comfort,
mm-hmm.
and the quiet of it. And it's always been a special place for me. But what the birds did is they took the natural world, and because birds move around and they're so habitat specific, it really defined where you are. If you're at the Vlei, you're going to see this bird, that bird, and that bird. Mm-hmm. If you go over to the Hudson River, you're going to see another set of birds. Mm-hmm. So they inform that nature that I love so much. They really place you. If you're seeing green-winged teal, you know you're in a certain habitat, you mm-hmm. know? And something about that magical thing that can fly and can migrate 9,000 miles, shorebirds, uh-huh. like shorebirds do, it makes my mind swim with imagination. It's...
I wonder if it really, kind of pulls us out of our little headspace.
That it does.
Put in the much bigger world, yeah. and just makes you realize that, you know, especially when you're suffering, you can't feel much other things when there's so much pain or when there's so much burden or stress. I think a lot of people experience that they don't have the capacity to think of, like, stop and look at a little beautiful thing because you're so full of, like, you know, whatever's going on in mm-hmm. your life.
Yeah.
But once you somehow being taken out of that little headspace and you suddenly see all this huge world is out there and doing their own business, then you kind of just go in and learn it. So that's really interesting. You said you grew up in the woods. Are you from New York State?
No, I grew up outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In a little town called Bernathen, which is a funny little place because it is surrounded by dense human population. Mm-hmm. But it's a throwback. It has the little Pennypack Creek that runs through it and a lot of wooded areas and still has farmland around it. But it's a tiny little place. So I grew up in that creek in the woods, down outside of Philadelphia.
So that's really interesting. So you grew up in nature. You know, for me, it's like I grew up in a suburb of Tokyo.
Okay.
So it's like a really city-ish. It's like a New Jersey of Tokyo, basically, is where I'm from. And so I didn't have much of any, like, nature, the living experience in nature as a child. And then, you know, I just spent my adulthood in Tokyo, and then I moved to New York City. So really, this is the first time I've really, like, being surrounded by trees and everything.
Wow.
And so for me, I'm not even there to have the sense of difference between being my mind blown by the caddisfly larvae,
yeah,
that's how
yeah,
I pronounce it,
yeah.
or by the birds. Like, everything just blows my mind.
Yeah.
So yeah. I just find it interesting that you were familiar with nature, but then there's something about birds particularly.
Some reason got me, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I'm happy for you that you are able, because I find a lot of people who grow up in cities, they end up being afraid of nature. Nature is scary. Woods are where the bad guy is.
Mm-hmm.
The bear is always going to attack you
right.
in their mind, you
right.
know. And the truth is, well, my experience of the woods is that it's the safest place you can be. It just, there's nothing that hurts you in the woods. It's a peaceful place. And
they're afraid of you.
Exactly. And animals are just doing their thing. And they're not out to get you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
that's great that you enjoy it.
Yeah. I'm so happy since I moved upstate.
Yeah.
But so once you started birding, did you join a bird club? How did you go
about it? Didn't happen immediately. Now, this is, happened to me in 2004. So we were still, you could be online, but the world wasn't online yet.
Oh.
And so, the way birders told each other about things were phone trees. They would call. If
uh-huh.
someone saw a rare bird, you would actually call up and find out. So I did. I poked around to look at different bird clubs, one up in Greene County, which didn't tend to do much. But I did join our John Burroughs
mm-hmm.
Natural History Society. And once I did my first Christmas bird count, that was what really nailed me down. That was, to me, blew my mind doing my first bird count like that. I just knew I was going to be doing this for the rest of my life. But, you know, I was amazed. I went out with those people and they knew everything and they could magically call in owls. And it was, and then they were just showing me birds, a horned lark. I had no idea. It was very cool.
I had the same. I went to the Christmas bird count in Central Park, and that really got me too.
Yeah, I've always wanted to see that. That's quite a count, that particular one.
Yeah, it's a big groups too. Like yeah. They separate into several groups and cover Central Park, which is such a small area compared to what we
right?
do here.
Yeah.
And so that's great. So you learn basically from other birders.
Yeah.
Start with.
Oh, absolutely. The first bit, it was mostly on my own with a field guide, a Sibley's guide, and just working it out. I mean, I had a bird that called in my yard. I couldn't find it. And it would do shree, 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 shree. It would make the sound over and over again. But it was invisible. I couldn't find it. But I kept on hearing that song and hearing that song. And I hunted for it and I hunted for it. Eventually, I found it. Found out in the book, it was a Louisiana water thrush.
Oh.
And they breed, right? I have a little stream that goes through my property. So they breed along slow-moving water. And so, you know, learning that way, slow and hard and hard fought to find out who was doing that singing, it would be something I would never forget because someone didn't say, oh, there's a Louisiana water thrush. I had to figure it out, which was great. But it was also nice when people just say, oh, no, that's a this or that, too.
I tried to figure things out by myself, too, and I kind of wish I participated more walks so I get to hear other people talk about it.
Oh, very
helpful.
Seems
to register my brain better. And I had the Merlin app, so I think it was...
Right.
I was starting at the
which
time.
Is dangerous because Merlin can give a lot of bad information.
But you can totally outsource your brain so you never remember anything,
right.
It seems.
Right. Well, as people ask me when they're talking about learning by burning by ear, by sound, is the first question they say, well, should I get recordings, you know, an app with recordings? And I say, yeah, it's great. It's wonderful to confirm something with, but it doesn't help you. Most people learn. What seems to help people learn bird song is finding and identifying the bird with your eyes and hearing it, that triangulation that helps you put it all together. That what seems to what cements it in your brain.
Yeah.
So yeah, Merlin's a wonderful tool, but it's got its limitations.
Right. Okay. What is your favorite local bird? Are we seeing?
Yeah, just more geese. My favorite local bird.
This is
a question of every time I've ever been interviewed about birding. It must be human nature to want to know what someone's favorite bird is. I do not have a favorite bird, but that being said, my favorite family of birds is probably sparrows, which is not what most people... seem to be interested in.
I found it the most hardcore.
They're hard. They're difficult.
Sparrow.
Yeah, because they're all brown and stripy.
Okay.
And I've always liked the birds that are rarer. I noticed that's an attractant to me. And in the family of sparrows, the family of Amadramus sparrows, like Henslow's sparrow and LeConte sparrow, those are my favorite of the sparrow family, and I love shorebirds particularly, but I think if I had to choose one bird that really gets to me, it's the northern saw-whet owl. And it's a little tiny owl, it's a migratory owl, and we don't know a whole lot about saw-whet owls, and I find that fascinating, and I never even thought to look for saw-whet owls around here till one night I heard one in my yard in January, tooting. And that got me into looking, and I've spent a lot of time. They overwinter. They're here, and they breed up in boreal areas, but they're more abundant here than people have ever thought. And the more I look into it, the more I find. Some years, like this year, we don't seem to have any this winter. But some years, they're all over the place. But they're very cute, and they're mysterious, and I love saw-whet owls.
So you said they would be here in the wintertime?
Sometimes, some winters. We really don't fully understand how and when and where they migrate. I mean, we do know when. They migrate through here right about Halloween, right at the end of October into November. And they overwinter part south of here and around here. But it's hit and miss where they are. Like I say, last winter, they were all over the place. This winter, I can't find one. I haven't seen, the last time I heard one was in December. And I go out frequently trying to find them. So I'm always trying to learn them by going out at night and various places and calling them. But you'd find them in pine woods.
Pine woods.
Yeah. And low, wet areas. Not big bodies of water, but, you know, just like little swampy areas with a little bit of water in it. Yeah, tough one to find. I've only ever found one just stumbling upon it in the woods.
That sounds pretty hard for beginners to find it.
Oh, it's hard for anybody. Anybody to find a saw-whet owl. It's a pretty big prize to find a saw-whet owl. They don't want to be found. They just tuck themselves away. I don't know if you ever heard that story about the one that was in the Christmas tree. Yeah. Well, they transported that whole tree with that saw-whet owl in there. He was a saw-whet. That was a saw-whet owl. They called him Rocky.
Right, because it went to Rockefeller.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
But what about the, so maybe the sparrows might be, so I'm trying to get the tips to find.
Sparrows?
The birds. So I'm thinking, well, there are a bunch of different kinds of sparrows, and it's easy for us to dismiss when we see sparrow-like thing. We just assume, oh, it's a house sparrow, or it's a song sparrow.
Right.
But there are, I guess they're somewhat more rare.
Oh, there's lots of species of sparrow. Yeah. Right here, for example, you have swamp sparrows. In spring, you'll get migrating Lincoln sparrows.
Right.
What other sparrows? I've even had Savannah sparrows, which is not a sparrow that you'd expect here, but right where we're standing here, I've had Savannah sparrows. They're birds of the open areas, and most sparrows are, you know, from weedy areas to open field areas. Farmland is a wonderful place for sparrows.
Farmland. And
edge, weedy edges, you know, any place where a field meets an edge where you get a little bit of growth on the edge. Yeah, sparrows are good in there.
Well, thank you very much for the interview.
Oh, well, thank you for interviewing me. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you.
Day one stormed, and it was beautiful. A day one stormed from the ground. Then the night she fell, and the air was beautiful. The night she fell all around. Look, see the days, the endless colored ways. Go play the game that you learned from the morning. And now we rise. We are everywhere, and now we rise from the ground. See, she flies, flies everywhere. See, she flies all around. So look, see the sights, the endless summer nights. Go play a game that you like from the morning.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
With the so-called deadline for non-time state budget being April 1st, things are hopping this week down at the state capitol. 1 week after the IPCC once again issued a dire warning about Earth's rapidly heating atmosphere and the lack of action by politicians to avoid climate collapse, faith leaders and environmental organizations joined with senators to call on Albany to take action in the budget. The groups highlighted the New York State Senate's climate plan, including its One House budget, which includes a centralized system for funding climate projects by Senator Harkin, and the Climate Superfund Act to hold the world's largest and richest oil companies accountable for funding climate damages and resiliency. We hear from Blair Horner, Executive Director of NYPERG, Senator Harkin, Chair of the Senate Environmental Committee, Senator May, and Catherine Nadeau of Catskill Mountain Keeper.
The fight over how New York should address the world's worsening climate crisis has hit a fevered pitch at the state capitol as lawmakers work to wrap up the budget. Embedded in the Senate's One House budget are a series of initiatives to match New York's climate goals with policies to achieve them. Opponents have launched a well-financed counteroffensive to stall these measures as part of a national strategy to protect the financial interests of the fossil fuel industry and their utility allies. The industry's counter-strategy hinges on a few talking points that get repeated over and over, the cornerstone of an effective propaganda campaign. The opponent's campaign is comprehensive and well-funded. It seeks to stoke fear and build anger among the public by using terms like radical and categorizing supporters as zealots. The goal is to bamboozle the public enough that they ignore the looming threat of a rapidly heating planet. In order to respond, let's start with the science. First, there is no scientific doubt that the planet is heating up to a level that poses a threat to human civilization and the health of all species. Moreover, the world's climate experts agree that human activity is driving this heating, primarily the burning of fossil fuels, oil, coal, and gas. Second, the world's climate science experts have issued dire warnings, most recently last week by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that unless we shift to powering the world through non-fossil fuels, the climate may reach a tipping point of no return. Third, there's broad agreement on what should be done. The world has agreed to a target global heating increase of no more than 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit above what it was before 1900. The world's experts have stated that public policies will need to make an immediate and drastic shift away from fossil fuels to prevent the planet from overheating dangerously beyond that level. Specifically, in order to avert climate disaster, there's a need for immediate and deep emissions reductions through all sectors of the economy. According to scientists, greenhouse gas emissions must be reduced by at least 43% by 2030, and the world must meet a goal of net zero greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2050. Those goals track New York's 2019 climate law, hardly a radical idea if state public policies are following the best science. There can be no doubt that we'll all have to sacrifice in order to avert the worst of climate change. But we cannot follow the people who lied about the burning of oil, coal, and gas to again bamboozle us about the direction of public policy. In fact, those industries should be on the financial hook, since they have and continue to do all they can to undermine climate policies designed to save lives and the planet. The Senate package considers that too and puts the world's largest oil companies on the hook for some of the state's future financial costs. And as you can see on this chart, over the last 2 years, the biggest oil companies have made $600 billion in profit. As lawmakers head down the home stretch for cobbling together a state budget, responding to the climate crisis must be at the top of the agenda. The Senate has offered a comprehensive path to follow. Albany must act. That's why environmentalists agree, and the morality of acting to protect future generations is why clergy are here today. Senator Harkin.
It's got to be climate or community-centered solutions. And so the Climate and Community Protection Fund does just that. It steers these funds into four different pots of money: climate jobs and infrastructure, community-directed solutions, community worker and transition assistance, and energy affordability. I think the governor just addresses energy affordability in her budget. The rest goes to the general. So we're very clear about where this money needs to go. We've also worked very closely with the AFL-CIO and the building trades and all of the member unions on strict labor standards, prevailing wage, PLAs, Buy America, retraining, a bridge to retirement. You know, as a senator representing the Indian Point nuclear power plant and going through that decommissioning, when that plant was turned off, the state was not prepared to act. We've got to learn those lessons. Jobs were lost, livelihoods were disrupted because people were close to retirement and there was no plan in place for a bridge to retirement. We've got to learn those lessons. So with that, I want to turn it over to my colleague, Rachel May, who I said,
I'm here because I want to be able to look in my daughter's eye and in the eye of other young people and say, I've done what I can, we are doing what we can to make sure that you have a functioning food system, that you have temperatures that are survivable, that you have forests and oceans and other species that are cohabiting on the earth with you, and not that you have the vision that the oil companies have. So these bills are really important for making sure we are not further subsidizing fossil fuel companies at the expense of our own children, to make sure that we are accounting for what the government is doing. I have a bill just about climate accountability. Like, where are we spending money and where is it, what's it going to? Also, just making sure that we are true to the Climate and Community Protection Act.
Hi, I'm Catherine Natto. I'm the Deputy Director for Catskill Mountain Keeper, and I'm here on behalf of the New York Renew Steering Committee. And I'm here to make three points. First, we know the problem. Second, we have the solutions. And third, now is our opportunity, now is our moment. So we know the problems. The UN laid them out in even starker detail last week. We know that if we allow our planet to rise another 3 degrees, we're going to be faced with a huge problem. And when we think about this, it doesn't sound like a lot. I think it can be hard for people to understand. But imagine what it feels like in your body if you have a fever that goes up even just 3 degrees. How do you feel at 101 degrees? Things stop functioning, you're not at your best, things start breaking down. And that's what we're risking, that's what we are, it's in jeopardy if we don't act. And that's the problem we're facing. Second, we have the solutions. You've heard about them today. We can hold polluters accountable and make sure that they're contributing to the cost of the solutions. We can put people to work with good family-sustaining jobs to build the renewable energy future we need. And we can put money out on the streets to support this transition, to support our communities, to support the people who need it most. So we have the solutions. And right now we have the opportunity. The Senate has put forward a bold vision in their One House budget. The governor has set us on this path by calling to put Cap and Invest into practice this year. Legislators from years past have been seeing into the future and knowing that we need the climate pathway, and they did that when they passed New York State's landmark groundmaking climate law. So we know the problem, we have the solutions, we have the opportunity, and now it's time for action, and we're calling on the state legislature to include these solutions in this year's budget. Make sure it gets done, put our families, our neighborhoods on the path that we deserve to be on to protect our climates, protect our communities, and build the future we deserve.
Senator Harkin responded to a media question, what were the chances of the final budget including the various climate provisions?
You know, my hope is the UN report will give all of us a sense of urgency that we don't have time to dicker. We don't have time to overanalyze, you know, the old phrase, analysis paralysis. As was mentioned, we know what the problems are. We know what the solutions are. We've included many of them in our One House. And quite frankly, the Assembly supports them too.
This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Next, here is Columbia County's Elvis Perkins with the song Sea Monkey from his 2020 album Creation Myths.